Hey guys, Sean Hayes here. Jason Bateman, Will Arnett, and I had a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to sit down with not one, not two, but three presidents of the United States on our recent episode of Smartless. That's because President Biden, a returning guest, brought two of his favorite pals, former Presidents Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, all joined us for unforgettable conversation. It's a historic episode of Smartless as we pry into the minds of these remarkable leaders. We'll cover everything from their time in office, America's responsibilities in the world, and their personal passions in an episode full of some candid stories, insightful perspectives, and a few surprises along the way. Whether you're a political junkie or just curious about the inner workings of the Oval Office, this episode is a must listen. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to hear from three of the most influential figures in recent American history. Follow Smartless on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also listen to Smartless ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Hello, welcome to CarCast and Edmunds Podcast, the first show of the year, 2024. Alistair, how are you?
I'm good. Happy New Year. Matt, Happy New Year, everybody.
Survivor trip?
Just about. Been in Europe for a couple of weeks. 11 hours back with two tiny children, was entertaining on the flight, but now they've got massive amounts of jet lag. So it's amazing how productive you can be at like 4 o'clock in the morning. You know, like if you'd been in my house 2 mornings ago at sort of 3:30 a.m., my wife was baking and I was busy taking a Christmas tree down because nobody would sleep. So yeah. It's all fun. It was nice to get back to Europe.
Why'd you put up a Christmas tree if you guys went to Europe for most of it?
Oh, we just put it up like straight after Thanksgiving. So we just shuffled everything forwards, but it looked a bit sorry for itself by the time we got home.
Yeah. Happy New Year. Welcome back. Hope everybody had a good trip. As you guys are starting to see, we are attempting to put the podcast up in its video format on YouTube now. And we're going to make some improvements and stuff over time. We're going to pop in occasionally to the Edmunds studio. But this is something that we're going to be doing here. We're going to be doing with Goldberg and adding some more stuff to the channel as well.
Just need the stylist, the clothing allowance, the makeup artist.
Yeah. Listen, the more you watch the videos, the more maybe we'll be able to fix up the videos. But as I mentioned in the first episode that we brought back with Goldberg this past week, we're also going to dive into some feature cars and some of the project builds. And you can see kind of peeking over my shoulder, that's the Ford Lightning that we're doing a wheel and tire package on, and we've been examining for possibly lowering the vehicle. Now that I've had it for a year, it's time to personalize it, have some fun with it. And then we'll dig into some of the other car projects and stuff that we have around there, the 2021 Mustang Mach 1, the Mustang Cobra, the SAC car, and some other stuff. And we also invite you to please subscribe to this channel, but subscribe to the Edmunds YouTube channel as well. And Goldberg's Garage. I think between these three video channels, we should be able to cover enough automotive content that you won't ever have to watch another YouTube channel again. but I guess you're welcome to. So, kicking things off, you got back into town, and then immediately started to jump into a Bentley and said, you know, I'm gonna, because you just spent all this time in the UK, might as well hop into a Bentley and use that as your test driver for the week.
It was like one night only, to be fair, and it was it was straight out of economy class with two small children into a $350,000 Bentley. I've driven a lot of the Bentleys over the years. This was a Flying Spur S.
Yeah, and it's gorgeous.
It's a beautiful way to travel. I can't imagine, no matter how much money I had, and I know that, you know, as you go on in life and hopefully earn a bit more money, then you know, your sort of aspirations change. I can't imagine ever spending 350 grand on one. But it is
You could lease it for like 10 grand a month.
Yeah, you could. Yeah. And maybe you've got so much money that it's it's a beautiful way to travel. It really is. I drove it home. I drove it into work, and the ride quality is wonderful. It's just the the fit and finish and the feel of the materials, just because they've got more license to play with higher quality materials, the leathers and the you know, the little aluminium, the little heat vents and things like that. It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful way to travel. But we were always playing that game, going through the options list, and there were some really choice items on this. This was in full kind of rap star spec, so really kind of vibrant blue, and it had this. I'm going to put it on my my Instagram channel, which is at Weaver on Cars. But it had this little. It's got a Bentley badge. You know, they have the little B that goes up and down out of the bonnet.
Yeah, the hood. Like what Rolls Royce does with their Spirit of Ecstasy, if they still have that. I guess they have it as an option. Pops up.
Yeah. And this was, I've been in Europe for 3 weeks. I'm saying bonnet instead of hood, but there you go. So this is I've never seen this before. So this thing traditionally goes up and down out of the hood, but this thing, well, not only was matte black, but was illuminated. And I've never seen this before. I mean, this is like, and then I looked at the options price, and now I've lost it as I'm talking to you. Oh, there we go. Illuminated Flying Bee Radiator Mascot in black gloss. How much?
I mean, I have it in front of me, but if I had to guess, I that's a tough one. You'd be like, it's expensive. It's going to be $1,200. But no, sir. It is $5,060.
Plus tax.
plus tax. Plus gas guzzler tax on top of that. The options list is pretty incredible. I was looking at some of the things on here, and you know, it's interesting because you go, oh, we're gonna get the 22-inch wheels, and this is the 22-inch wheels painted black, right? And it's, I don't know, it's about $3,700. And I've seen this before, going options on cars, Porsche, Range Rover, anything, and go, well, that feels like the price of what a set of wheels would cost. So did you not get wheels with the vehicle and you opted for the 20? Like if you order the vehicle and you don't get the optional 22s, does it still say 20 inch wheels for $2,800 and 22s are $3,700, or is it included? Is there a wheel that's included, is what I'm saying, versus.
It always takes me back to the 1980s. My dad bought Mercedes E-classes, and it was like his pride and joy. But in those days in the UK, they sold it without a stereo. So the argument was always that, well, actually people want to, you know, choose a hi-fi system that they want. But my dad was like, really, you know, my dad was a bit tired, not much of a music lover. So we ended up with this kind of 1970s radio that he just transferred from vehicle to vehicle. So this was a company car and we all loved the radio, but it like took me about 15 years to get into upgrade to something that at least had like, you know, LCD display or something. And
yeah,
it kind of reminds me of that. I mean, I was looking at it. I mean, I know this is like always the game with these cars, and you have to kind of like mentally think about them in a different way because they are a luxury good. They're not really a car in its traditional sense, but like the touring specification, you and I were looking this up as we came on air, and it's like $8,800. And that's things like cruise control and lane change assist, which you would expect on a 20 grand Nissan. So you've got to have that mood lighting specification. Now, mood lighting is pretty much on everything these days. That's 2,600.
I mean, you mentioned the stereo. The stereo is $9,100 on this car, but yeah, it would have been awesome, funny if there was no stereo, like you're saying, like, no, there's no radio at all. And if you want it, it's $9,100, but it's not. It's the upgrade that's $9,100.
And you can either have the standard one, or you can have a Bang & Olufsen one, or you can have the Naim or Name, however you pronounce it, for $9,100, but it sounds awesome, and it has these little firers that basically give you the sort of the sensation of the noise as well. So BMW has done this as well, but it gives you a little bit of kind of vibration through the seat and everything else, so you feel the sound, and it is mega. I have like a little playlist that I use so I can compare different hi-fi systems, and yeah, it's very cool. But it is
just over nine grand. What is the styling specification? There's two big line items here, which I'm curious about. So, styling specification. It's already a gorgeous car. It's got all the S trim bits and pieces, yeah. right? What's 12 and a half grand?
So I believe that is like front splitter, rear spoiler. It's like little aerodynamic addendum. And then on top of that, on our car, you've got carbon fiber. Carbon fiber was inside.
But then the carbon fiber body kit with the blue accent striping.
And I'm looking at. That's the right? 15 grand.
That one's 15 grand. So if you spent 12 and a half grand on a styling specification and then another 15 grand on the exterior carbon fiber pieces, I mean, seems like quite a bit there, but I don't know. If you're buying this car, you're going, I want all of the options. You want a $241,000 car that you add $110,000, $115,000 worth of options onto.
Yeah. And the one thing that grates me is where you've got things that you would just expect to have, like lane change assist or cruise control. I mean, like Porsche as well. If you get a standard 911, the standard Hi-Fi 911 is terrible. So you basically have to upgrade to the Bose. And then if you want to go further, upgrade to Baumeister. And I guess Bentley's doing the same thing. But when you add it all together, so the standard price of the car is 241 grand. The total option cost on ours, 114 grand. Then you arrive at 355, to which you add destination charge, 3,100. I know everybody charges destination charge, but that always winds you up as well. It's like, can I come and pick it up then for free? Can I come to Crewe and pick it up for free? So 3,100 for that. And then also gas guzzler tax, $1,000. So that brings you basically to 360 grand for the car. But it's a lovely thing. It's a lovely thing.
You know, when the Bugatti Veyron came out, we were getting into this. And then I think I spoke to Craig Jackson from Bear Jackson. He brought his Veyron over to the studio at one point and he bought it at his auction. And somebody was actually really driving it from Vegas to Arizona or something like that. And, you know, I had some rock chips and things like that. So he did some work on it, emblem, windshield. He had to do a few things on his car. And he talked about how expensive it was. And it started getting me thinking about, like, when you get into these supercars that are million, 1.5 million, 1.8 million, $2 million, when somebody goes to order that car, they're excited about getting the car and spending that kind of money and optioning it out with a lot of cool stuff. And then there's a lot of complaining about the maintenance costs and the $15,000 brake pads and the $1,200 battery that says VW on it. And it's the same as as a $100 battery. And so my thought was, I think on those cars, I don't know what the price point is, $1 million or more, maybe something like this, but let's say $1 million or more a car. I don't think the buyer is going to throw a fit if you said, now it's $1.2 million, but warranty, maintenance, everything is included. Just charge them up front in the sticker price. Just include it in the price and go, here's the beauty of owning a Bugatti Veyron. You'll never have to spend a dime on it again, right? Everything, oil changes, brake pads, everything's included. And just charge a couple of $100,000 up front. I bet it would be the best selling supercar because it's the $30,000 brake job or whatever that you don't want to do. You don't want to spend $10,000 because you have a chip in your windshield, you know?
You're right. I always look at it in the classic car market. As you know, I'm fortunate to have a 993 911. And the reality is it doesn't actually cost, A, it's appreciating, and B, it doesn't cost much to run because there's a massive support infrastructure. And Porsche's really good at supporting it too. But I always wonder I always wanted a Ferrari 599, you know, the front engine V12 GT.
Yeah, love that car.
Partly because I drove one years ago across South America. Ferrari did this big expedition. I drove it across Bolivia and had an amazing trip. So it's got this kind of emotional attachment to it. And at the moment, there was one over Christmas went for like 160 grand, 150, 160 grand. They're actually much cheaper than the 550 Maranello, which has got crazy money, which was the stick shift. But then you start looking at 599s and thinking, like, I was looking at one and it's got the carbon ceramic brakes. You're like, oh. And then it's got flappy paddle gearbox. That's that single clutch system. And I was like, oh. So even if you could say, like, I'm going to find some money and I'm going to buy this, you're just looking at it thinking this is just going to be a money pit.
Yeah.
And I always remember a friend of mine bought a 550 Maranello in 2008 at the height, just when the crash happened. I think he paid like £40,000, or what, $50,000. So he's made a fortune on the car. But I remember saying to me, the little rubber around the headlights perished. And I was like, oh, that's, you know, it's like, no. So only Ferrari make like the little rubber around the headlight. And it was like $1,000.
Yeah.
and it was a $2 part, but it was like, you have to buy the Ferrari one because it has to fit and it's $1,000. So that's the problem with all this stuff. So you've just got, and that's also why a lot of these Bentleys, you know, like some of the depreciation is pretty high because you're getting into a market where people, you know, if you're buying, that's why if you're buying it for like 50 grand or whatever, a few years down the line, you don't want all the service charges.
Yeah, it's nuts. It's expensive. And Ferrari's always been kind of notorious for that, you know, with timing belt changes and things like that. Engine's got to come out of the car. But I mean, I don't know. I guess that's just part of the experience of being a Ferrari owner. And we're just picking on Ferrari, but there's a lot more than Ferrari.
You know, I spent my life trying to do like sensible things, sensible investments, and I've never bought something stupid. And I feel at some point in my life, I need to have that experience. Like buying a classic 911 is not a stupid purchase because they don't depreciate and they're quite cheap to run and they're awesome. Buying like a used V12 Ferrari definitely falls into that category.
Yeah. And so, I want one so badly.
And I want a V12 because I think they're a little bit more kind of considered than the, I'd love a 458, the V8. That's the V8 I would buy, last naturally aspirated, or a 355, but they're a ton of money to run. But yeah, like a 599 would be an amazing car.
Hey guys, Sean Hayes here. Jason Bateman, Will Arnett, and I had a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to sit down with not one, not two, but three presidents of the United States on our recent episode of Smartless. That's because President Biden, a returning guest, brought two of his favorite pals, former presidents Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, all joined us for unforgettable conversation. It's a historic episode of Smartless as we pry into the minds of these remarkable leaders. We'll cover everything from their time in office, America's responsibilities in the world, and their personal passions in an episode full of some candid stories, insightful perspectives, and a few surprises along the way. Whether you're a political junkie or just curious about the inner workings of the Oval Office, this episode is a must listen. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to hear from three of the most influential figures in recent American history. Follow Smartless on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also listen to Smartless ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
100% agree. I was always a sucker for the long nose front engine, sort of front mid engine of Ferraris. And I know someone go, it doesn't perform as well. It's not a 458. It's not a 488. It's like, I know, but it's so pretty and it's V12 and it sounds amazing. And that's what I want. So,
and the image is a bit like, I don't know. There's something about like the V8 Ferrari. I don't, it depends where you live in the world, but in LA or something, I think I just feel more comfortable in a V12. I don't understand. Say anything inappropriate, but it's more of a thoughtful choice, shall we say.
Yeah. You're right. I see way more of the of the V8s.
Actually, the one to buy is the 612. I spent a lot of time in a 612 Scaglietti.
Yeah.
And they were the 2+2, and 2+2 Ferraris never held their value. And it was always seen as not a particularly pretty car, but I actually think it's aged pretty well. And they are much affordable. Yeah.
You get an FF with a 12.
Yeah, you get an FF. Family friendly.
Yeah. I actually drove one of those. I liked it. I like the car. It's kind of goofy looking, but cool.
Yeah.
When
get
I
it
saw
in a discreet color.
when I saw it, I was like, oh, this is the bigger Ferrari version of the BMW M Coupe. You know, that looks like a shoe.
Yeah, like the clown shoe car.
Yeah. But I always liked that car too. I was so close to buying one of those cars. I drove the coupe, and then I drove the convertible, the M, before I bought my 99 M3. I ended up buying the 99 M3, but I drove the little one first, and it just didn't have some of the build quality. And I drove one with a dine-in package on it, so it was a little faster and it was a little tighter overall. And I was at a dealer down in like Escondido, like San Diego ish area, and we put the top down on the M Roadster, and he's like, go ahead, open it up. I was with a salesman, and this one was used a little bit, but it was the dining package, and I got on it and I shifted hard. I did the 1-2 shift, and the 1-2 shift, when I shifted to the second, the gear knob came off the lever and I threw it and it launched out the back of the vehicle. So we were driving, 1-2, boom, popped off and just flew. And he's like, yeah, that comes off. And I was like, all right, what else you got in the dealer lot? Yeah. What else you got over there? And I ended up just getting the brand new M3 in 99 at the time, the E36. But
Jonathan Alfalan, our head of testing at Edwards, he's got the M Coupe, and he's got a roof rack on it as well, which makes it look very cool. So he can put a surfboard on. And I actually did. I'm so old now that I did the original road test back in 98. I remember driving one from Munich back to London. And at the time, they were like, they weren't that loved sort of as a thing, because they had the old E33 series back end. But it was a skunkworks car. It was all done as a sort of after hours from a few enthusiasts within the factory, and then kind of revealed to management and decided to build it. So there's a really cool story behind those things, and they are quite cool today.
Yeah, they are cool today. And that's another car that's like high up on Adam Carolla's list. Like, we've always talked about that car, and he always had something for that car. He's like, it's just a cool piece. And
the problem is he probably wouldn't fit, because if you're 6'4" like I am, you basically don't fit.
Yeah. I don't recall if he ever had one. He had his E46 with the built motor and the supercharger that never ran well, and it took me forever to fix it, but I got it fixed. Then sold
it's a bit like the Z8, the Henrik Fisker designed car. You know, that I remember at the time, that was based on an M5 and wasn't actually that nice to drive. But today it just looks so cool.
Man, I remember when that car came out, a guy I know, he was like, I love the Aston Martin so much, but the Z8 is gorgeous. And he ended up getting the Aston Martin, like the last of the DB7 convertible. I still has it. And just over the years, just always put the top down, just drove it all the time during the summer. And over the years, just keep putting a new top on it because it gets all... And I was like, it's a gorgeous car, but talk about the wrong decision. DB7 versus the Z8. Look at the values of that Z8 now versus that DB7. I don't think you can give that DB7 away, but that Z8 just keeps popping up at auction after auction, pulling good money.
The best way I heard of it, Juha Kankinen was world rally champion a few times back in the 80s. I lived through the whole Group B area. I went to see his place in Finland because he has an epic car collection. I had a whole bunch of Ferraris and Lancia Integrales and some old rally cars, Group B rally cars and stuff. And I did it. This is going back years and years. I did a feature on it. And he told me that when he won the World Rally Championship for Lancia, because they were Ferrari was part of the group at the time, they basically said to him, right, what Ferrari do you want as a thank you? And this was in the days of the F40. And I think he chose a 512 TR because he lived in Monaco and wanted to use it a bit.
Yeah.
And then he sort of said to me, like, I realized that was like the worst financial decision of my life. So I bought an F40 just so I could feel better about it.
Yeah, but now the 512 TR is going up.
Yeah. But sadly, he didn't really drive them, but it was a cool, he could actually take out a Group B rally car and drive it around like his house and slide it around. It's a very cool trip.
Nice. In Finland?
In Finland, yeah.
Be awesome to have a track back there. Okay, I want to shift gears a little bit here. I want to talk about the Chevy Blazer EV. You guys got a Chevy Blazer, did not have a good time with it. Apparently, word spread about that. And I don't know if it's just because of you guys or what, but the GM has just stopped everything. They're like, you can't, don't sell it. Stop making it. We gotta go kind of back to the drawing board. So explain a little bit like what's going on with that car. What did you guys experience?
Yeah, so as if you're a regular listener, we buy up a bunch of cars and run them on a long-term basis, and we bought a Blazer EV because it's a super interesting car. It's not the first one, but it's the first Chevy on the Ultium platform. So just for background, without getting too sort of geeky about it, GM has developed this Ultium technology, which will underpin all of their electric cars. And they, by 2035, want to go all EV. So this is a really big deal for them. And this is not just cars, SUVs, it's also the trucks like the Silverado EV. And so we were really interested to buy up one of the first. And the Blazer EV generally has been pretty well received as a vehicle. And so we went out and bought one. But then we've had a bunch of sort of extraordinary issues with it, a lot to do with infotainment, a lot to do with charging. And we took it back to a dealership and basically said, look, you know, what's wrong with this? And they came back with a total of 23 different error codes, which in our experience is more than we've ever experienced in any vehicle ever. And if you just Google sort of Edmunds Blazer EV, this will pop up. But we've only done 1600 miles on the odometer. And it's now back in a dealership, and it's been in a dealership for about 3 weeks, and they're trying to build in the new sensor, but we don't actually know when we're getting the vehicle back. So we started reporting on this, and we got a huge pickup across the web. And another publication also had an issue. Inside EV has had an issue with a similar thing with the infotainment breaking down. So we've had conversations with GM. All very amicably. Obviously, they're working hard to fix the fault. In our case, they actually flew an engineer down from Detroit to the dealership to try and fix it. But they issued this stop sale notification. So as things stand, you can't currently buy a Blazer EV. And we're also hearing that this applies to a lot of the other vehicles like the Cadillac Lyriq, which are based on the same technology. So it's not good. Suboptimal.
Yeah. So you mentioned the shared platform with Cadillac as well. I want to say.
And Honda. Honda Prologue. Yeah.
And the upcoming Acura. What are they calling? The ZDX?
The first EV Acura. Yeah.
Yeah. Got kind of a shared platform there as well. I guess I'm curious as to the process now. Is like, how does a vehicle with so many potential issues make it to the dealership? You know, like, how does it make it out of the factory? And it just feels like we're over that, you know, before the big bailouts of all the car companies. I get it. The idea was for a company like GM to go, we're going to release 50 new models of vehicles this year, and 12 of them are a huge hit. That's enough for us to make money, right? And then they couldn't really do that anymore. Everything had to become better. You know, we're like, we can't release 50 models. We can release 20, and they all have to be good. We can't make junk anymore. Like, there needs to be some level of quality financially. It's not a, hey, we're, you know, 12 out of 50 is enough profit for us to be fine. But there's just so much backlash, especially with in the world of social media now. How do vehicles make it out of the factory and just flounder? Like, it just can't, just terrible piece of equipment.
Yeah, it's hard to I mean, I think like the underlying car is pretty decent. We don't rate it as highly as some other publications that might have given it an award. But, you know, the underlying car is pretty decent. And I think, you know, they will probably get this right. But it is surprising to come from GM. I mean, we've talked a lot on this show about Lucid and all this sort of startup brands. Tesla themselves had tended to throw the cars early to market and let the early adopters sort them out. So they almost use Tesla particularly, and I think Lucid's done the same, is get vehicles into market, start the cash flowing, and you know, a lot of customer feedback in the first year will help you fix stuff. And even Rivian, which is generally our Rivian, which has generally been a lot more reliable than the Lucid, that's had a ton of things that have just been done to it over time as they've just learned more and more. Yeah. And to be fair to Lucid, our Lucid Air has got better and better as well. So there's a difference here. Like a lot of the stuff with the new cars can be software based. So we know, for example, that the new Fisker hasn't got cruise control at the moment, but that's coming because it's a software issue. What's surprising here is this is GM, and the expectations from the consumer are just different. You know, a lot of Lucid customers, certainly early on, will probably accept some issues in, you know, to have the latest shiny thing. I think when you're General Motors and there's enormous amount of pressure on you to get the whole EV thing right, and you're facing a Tesla with, 60-70% of the market share, and, you know, Ford's done well with the Lightning. It's having a few hiccups at the moment. So, you know, there's a lot of pressure there. And it's to me, it's surprising that we're having the issues that we are and that there's not a quick solve, because this could be over-the-air updates and it's just a software thing. But it also seems that there's some hardware issues as well, which is why we're not getting the vehicle back. So, yeah, it's pretty shocking for a manufacturer of that scale in a world where you have so much pressure to get this right. I mean, you know, people are struggling to make money on EVs. People are struggling at the moment to sell EVs, certainly for a price that people want to buy them for. And, you know, this stuff doesn't help. It really doesn't. It's like, well, either I'll buy a Tesla because they seem to work okay, or I'll just stick to my ICE car.
Do you think the luxury car buyer is more forgiving? Because, you know, you point out Tesla, Lucid, on some extent Rivian, like these are not inexpensive cars. So being sort of a first adopter and wanting to get the cool new piece, maybe that buyer is a little more forgiving. Maybe that buyer has more than one car. But yeah, it seems like, okay, but Chevy, Blazer, EV, the audience that they're going after, I'm not saying it's a cheap car. I'm just saying it's not as expensive as Lucid, right? So this is probably their only car, and it has higher expectations of reliability, I think, than say Lucid, coming from GM and coming from the price point and the customer. That's just kind of my thought, is I think this is a tough blow for GM on this vehicle.
Yeah, if we go back to like the Bentley conversation that we kicked off this show with, the Bentley Flying Spur does not have wireless Apple CarPlay, which is shocking, really.
Yeah.
When you think about the money. And the USB ports in the front are USB-A rather, USB-B and not USB-C.
Yeah.
Which again, it feels very dated today. But I think if you're buying a Bentley, small volume manufacturer, you're sort of, even with the power of the Volkswagen group behind it, you kind of accept those things to a certain point, even if it might wind you up a bit.
I mean, you do, but I'm driving an Audi that has wireless CarPlay. So why couldn't they put it in the Bentley?
Yeah, but that's to do with the generation of the technology. So you've got older technology. And then you've got like the Lucid customer, who the first customers probably want the shiny new thing, tech people, that sort of thing, and are willing to accept certain things. But I also know a lot of customers, because they've got certain customers who just weren't willing to accept that and didn't expect it. The difference for Tesla was Tesla started this, and for probably a decade, pretty much had the market to themselves. So if the build quality on the Model S wasn't great, or when the Model 3 came out, the build quality was pretty lousy, but they were the only game in town. So if you wanted a Tesla with a fancy screen and everything else, you were willing to accept stuff. And now Tesla's got to the point where the cars are well-made, they're reliable, and now they have a different audience. I mean, people are buying a Model Y today because it's cheap, and because it's a cheap and accessible way into the EV market, which is very different from where they were a few years back. You know, GM, this is about taking people, I mean, it's called a Blazer. You know, it's about taking traditional customers and converting them to EVs. So it's a very different situation. And I think, you know, you're just not as forgiving because you look at the scale of the company and think you should be able to get this right. And I think they will get it right. There's just too much at stake. But it's definitely a blow, and I think there's probably a few people within GM had a pretty bad holiday season.
And there's a lot of things on the list. Again, I mean, I have the Ford Lightning you can see behind me, and I've gotten a few letters and a recall. There's, I don't know, something with the taillight plastic leaks, gets water in it or something like that, and a couple things. But I haven't had any issues with it. Nothing's broken. Everything's worked. So I'll bring it in at some point soon. And yeah, I get it. It's kind of a new thing for them. So there's going to be a few things they want to fix. But the list of things wrong on this Blazer EV is quite robust. And you mentioned they flew an engineer out to try to fix this. I'm like, fix what? Because I mean, is the body control module guy the same guy as the guy who does the adjustable seat memory? Because how does one engineer go through and look at these issues? It sounds like they need a team of people. There's just more than you would expect.
And I think a lot of this you can do over the air because you can sort of analyze a lot of it, but it's, yeah, and ultimately this is basically put us in a position where we can't use a vehicle. So now we're just waiting for it back. And obviously we're in a slightly different place. We're a publication. We've got access to, you know, we have 300 vehicles a year coming through the office. So it's not like we're desperate for this vehicle. But it's, you know, if you're a consumer, you rightly say this is a $60,000-$70,000 vehicle, which is probably, you know, your only car or your primary vehicle. So it's, you know, EVs have had a lot of bad press recently about slowing sales. A lot of stories about a lot of, you know, including the Mustang Mach-E, where there's a lot sitting around on dealer lots trying to be sold. And it's a really kind of tricky point in the growth of the EV, trying to fix the infrastructure, trying to fix the price point. And if you're then getting into bad press around reliability and dependability, it's just not a good place to be. But the other thing looking at this is not the charging obviously is an EV related thing, but a lot of these things aren't. They're just sort of infotainment and everything else. So it's a tough situation. And you know, we've had conversations with GM, we've had conversations with other manufacturers. I mean, the way this works is we're not out to get anybody. Edmund's remit is to say to the consumer, you know, would we advise you to buy this vehicle? The way I think about it is, the way the team thinks about it, hopefully, is you're standing in a pub. You know, it's like you and I going for a pint and you know nothing about cars. And you say to me, like, you know, what would you buy? Would you buy a Blazer EV or a Model Y? And that's the kind of advice that we're trying to give.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a tricky place.
Yeah. And listen, I think...
Hey guys, Sean Hayes here. Jason Bateman, Will Arnett, and I had a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to sit down with not one, not two, but three presidents of the United States on our recent episode of Smartless. That's because President Biden, a returning guest, brought two of his favorite pals, former Presidents Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, all joined us for unforgettable conversation. It's a historic episode of Smartless as we pry into the minds of these remarkable leaders. We'll cover everything from their time in office, America's responsibilities in the world, and their personal passions in an episode full of some candid stories, insightful perspectives, and a few surprises along the way. Whether you're a political junkie or just curious about the inner workings of the Oval Office, this episode is a must listen. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to hear from three of the most influential figures in recent American history. Follow Smartless on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also listen to Smartless ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
All the car companies, even the legacy car companies, are starting to figure out the more and more technology that they put into these cars. And you're sourcing all of these pieces from different manufacturers, different sensors and different motors, and everything has to be controlled by the same software, if you will, the same computer basically running the thing. It's kind of tough to make all of these hundreds and hundreds if not thousands of little bits of pieces that all have to tie into one piece of software that, you know, kind of runs and looks and data logs the entire car. You know, it's just kind of a tough thing to do. As I'm sitting here staring into a laptop thinking, what are all the pieces in the laptop that makes it work? And then you think of all the different pieces of software that you install, and it all has to kind of work with this machine, and which ones slow it down, which ones crash, which ones, it's like, that's basically what's happening with all the suppliers on a car. And in this particular case, they just have a bad time getting all of the supplied pieces to talk to each other. Because you're right. If a lot of it can be done over software, which you hopefully is the case, you don't want faulty hardware, right? Software is an easier solution, especially if it can be done over the air. But if they can fix a lot of this and just getting the computer to talk to all of these different components, then hopefully it'll get worked out sooner rather than later.
And the other thing about it is, if you think about it from a car company's perspective, you are hiring very different people today than you were even 10 years ago. You know, like Ford took on a senior executive from Apple to help them with, you know, and that will come with a heavy stipend to, you know, to help them develop EV and software technology. Same with Lucid, actually. They have a senior Apple, somebody from Apple. So it's not, you know, these are not mechanical engineers or chemical engineers they used to be. These are basically software people developing, you know, developing cars. It's a very different company. It's a very different mindset. And you're right. Yeah. I mean, you and I have it pretty easy. We sort of sit here, we drive the cars around and we say, oh yeah, the glove box is a bit small. You've got to understand the context of what goes into that. But at the end of the day, no matter how complex they are, how much they cost and everything else, how much engineering might is behind them, you're still giving it to a consumer and asking for 60 grand and saying, here is a product. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. So,
yeah,
it's tough. I mean, I hope GM sorts it out. I mean, Honda's going to be looking at this and saying, hang on a minute, we're launching the Prologue and Acura, the ZDX. And obviously, there's a whole lot bunch of Ultium vehicles that are coming down the pipeline. Silverado EV, Equinox, there's a whole bunch of bunch of cars coming down it, so yeah. that you know that they're about Cadillacs. To launch, and Cadillacs and Hummers, and yeah,
it's I don't know, it's gonna be kind of interesting, but honestly, like I was saying before, if you said Hummer or the Cadillac had all of these issues, I think we're more forgiving. I just think that customer is a little bit more forgiving than the Chevy Blazer customer.
Yeah, and it's hard. I mean, I had a Fisker the other day, and we had some issues with that, which they're working through. And I got out of it, and our family car is a Genesis GV60, and it's not as arguably not as cool as this Fisker. You don't have like California modes where all the windows go down, and but I got it's just so beautifully engineered, and everything works, and
it works.
Yeah, and it's just the whole thing feels so beautifully considered. There's a few things I don't like about it still, but it's. Yeah, you don't need like, I don't need 500 horsepower. I'm quite happy with 350 if everything works, you know.
Yeah, well, maybe.
Kind maybe.
Like 500 horsepower.
Depends what you're doing with it, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess it depends what you're doing with it. All right, so before we wrap up, I just want to quickly touch on the North American Car, Truck, and Utility Vehicle of the Year. This isn't the Edmunds Awards, which we have covered, but this is... also something that you're a part of.
Yeah, so the Edmunds Top Rated Awards are launching at the end of January. This is the, as you say, North American Car, Truck, and Utility, or NACTOY, as it's more familiarly known. I mean, it's an award. I was asked to be a juror, and proud to be so. It's you know, it's a award with a lot of prestige behind it. And there's about 50 people involved, and we all have a vote. And there's some finalists that are launched, that are announced at the LA Auto Show. And then the winners were announced in Detroit today. And of course, it's like anything else when you're not, this is not one publication. This is kind of fairly broad spectrum of people voting. So you're always kind of interested in how it shakes out. But so I think the Toyota Prius won the car.
Yes.
The Kia EV9 won the utility of the year. And then the Super Duty F-250, the Super Duty Ford won the truck of the year.
Yeah. Prius, I was expecting. EV9 has really been doing well. I was expecting that as well, because the Telluride was so successful and such a good car. Having the EV9, the EV version of it, although priced a little expensive, I expected. I don't know. Truck of the year, Ford Super Duty. I mean, not that,
yeah, that was one
with it. It's just,
I don't know whether I could officially say what I voted for or didn't, but that was the one that surprised me. Shall we say the Super Duty? I think, you know, the Colorado is a great truck, the Chevy, the midsize. But also the Super Duty is, you know, it's a fantastic working truck. It's the sort of, you know, we always say like the heartbeat of America, and they've done a good job updating it. So
yeah. All right, well, there's the list of the three winners.
Yeah, awesome. I think the Prius, it was the Prius and the Ioniq 6, which were probably the front runners for car.
Okay.
But the Prius is just a really good, you know, it looks cool now. It's got nice interior and it's very affordable. You know, it's under 30 grand. So there's a lot to be said for the Prius. And then the EV9 is just a great family SUV that's also an EV. So yeah, I've got no issues with how my fellow jurors have shaken this out. So, and then at the end of the month, we've got the Edmunds Top Rated Awards, which is all about our testing process. So we can talk about that then.
All right. So we're going to wrap things up. Till next week. Hopefully you guys liked the video. We're going to do more. We're going to figure out ways to bring in some guests and
get my haircut,
prove the whole, yeah, maybe get a haircut. Maybe I'll get a haircut. Improve the whole thing for you guys. So if you want to keep up to date on it, we appreciate if you subscribe to the channel. We always love that. And to subscribe to the Edmunds YouTube channel as well. Keep it flowing. Keep it flowing into your inbox. Is there anything else we're missing before we wrap up?
No, I think that's all good. We have just had some good, if you want to check out like all the new cars this year, we just launched our A to Z film. Which actually features yours truly. So that's worth checking out on YouTube.
And you're going to head out to CES?
So I'm heading to the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas on Monday. There's actually a lot of automotive brands are there. Mercedes has got some big stuff going down. Hyundai, Kia, Honda, Volkswagen. So it's becoming, now the Detroit Auto Show is dead. This is, I should say, not quite dead. It's moved to the summer. You know, CES has become more and more important, and you know, particularly in a world where everybody's talking about technology. So I'm heading there Monday, Tuesday, so we'll talk about that next week.
Yeah, we'll have plenty to talk about. All right, guys, thanks so much for listening, and until next time, keep the air and the spare in the bag and the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on carcastshow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit carcastshow.com.
Hey guys, Sean Hayes here. Jason Bateman, Will Arnett, and I had a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to sit down with not one, not two, but three presidents of the United States on our recent episode of Smartless. That's because President Biden, the returning guest, brought two of his favorite pals, former Presidents Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, all joined us for unforgettable conversation. It's a historic episode of Smartless as we pry into the minds of these remarkable leaders. We'll cover everything from their time in office, America's responsibilities in the world, and their personal passions in an episode full of some candid stories, insightful perspectives, and a few surprises along the way. Whether you're a political junkie or just curious about the inner workings of the Oval Office, this episode is a must listen. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to hear from three of the most influential figures in recent American history. Follow Smartless on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also listen to Smartless ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.